previously produced. Number 10, existing conditions, technical memorandum as it relates to the City of Winston Transportation System plan. Number 11, future conditions under the same plan. I'll enter those into the record at this time. As you can see here, we have put on the large screen the conceptual plan that was produced and submitted to the city for review. I apologize if you can't see this very well. We will try to scroll in and just try to amplify the different areas as we may feel necessary to discuss them. I'm going to try to refrain from walking around with this thing as it makes me feel like a game show host with one of those microphones here. So the applicant, who is here present tonight, is requesting the conditional use permit for the recreational vehicle park. The current zoning designation is agricultural open space. In the ag open zoning designation, it is a conditionally permitted use for a recreational vehicle park. I will cite for the record that there is no other zone in the city that exists where a recreational vehicle park is allowed, either permitted or conditionally permitted. So unless you have a property that is zoned ag open, there is no permitting avenue to allow for a recreational vehicle park in any regard. So I wanted that clear for the record. Because it is specifically listed in a specific zone, a conditional use permit application is the appropriate permitting avenue, which is what the applicant has produced. The application is coming before the Planning Commission at the request of city staff. The applicant is requesting the RV park to be 89 spaces. There is one misnomer that was located and clarified early on in the application process, but a new conceptual plan did not make it fast enough to make it into the materials. There are six tiny homes. Looks like our computer died here. Apologize about that. I'm going to scroll in so you know what we're talking about here. If you notice, in the northeastern area where my mouse is, there's a label that says six tiny homes. The applicant is actually requesting there and in the northwest corner, cabins, which you know don't necessarily fall under the tiny homes umbrella. So that's one clarification we wanted to offer for the record. The Planning Commission, obviously conducting a public hearing this evening and accepting testimony. The applicant's request for compliance with the applicable criteria in the Winston Municipal Code is according to Section 154.020, Sections 154.055 through 154.072, and 154.155 and 119. The applicable criteria in the conditional use permits section is 154.170 through 154.191. Apologize about those numbers, but that's important to read into the record. The conditional use permit application was filed with the city on September 6th of this year and deemed complete September 16th. Notice of the public hearing on the application for a conditional use permit before the Planning Commission was given in accordance with sections 154.180 of the Municipal Code. Notice was sent to affected property owners of record within 150 feet and public districts and governmental agencies on October 19, 2022. A revised hearing date was scheduled, and that notice was then in turn sent out October 31st, 2022. We received 33 responses from either affected property owners, those feel like they were affected, those within 150 feet, local or state governmental agencies. Public water, the subject property has access to public water from the Winston-Diller Water District along Northwest Abraham Avenue. Public water will have to be extended to accommodate the development. It should be noted for the record that beyond the connection from Abraham Avenue, the connection for water will be private throughout the park. Sanitary sewer, the subject property has access to sanitary sewer from the city of Winston along, also along Northwest Abraham Avenue. Sanitary sewer will also be private beyond the connection point on Abraham. Northwest Abraham Avenue is designated as a minor collector under the city's transportation system plan and is currently under the city's jurisdiction and in our inventory. Northwest Abraham Avenue has an existing right-of-way width of 60 feet and is developed to city standards, apart from the sidewalk lacking on the southwest side. No additional right-of-way or street improvements are necessarily required. However, if approved, sidewalks would be required to be installed along the frontage for the property. The Northwest Abraham Avenue is a designated bicycle and pedestrian pathway, and so that will have to be facilitated as part of the review. Overlays, the subject property is located within the 100-year floodplain and the regulatory floodway. The proposed development will have to comply with all applicable provisions with the FEMA National Flood Insurance Program and the floodplain section of the Winston Municipal Code. Madam Chair, we do have several areas as it relates to the Winston Municipal Code Section 2 supplementary provisions. There are findings likewise that are located in the staff report. We would like to place a strong emphasis on the section of the staff report that offers responses to remonstrances. And they are broken down at the concluding portion of the staff report. And that would be page 14. Under findings of fact, remonstrances, they are according to topic. We'll start with traffic. So I wanted to place emphasis on this part of the staff report because these are the responses in terms of findings to what you said, to how you responded, your concerns, the different things that really you feel like need to be addressed, right? So we tried to take all of your responses, place them in the report, and address them according to category. There are certain areas that are outside of the planning scope. For example, property values. That's a tough one. That doesn't fall under the scope of review. Although we are very sensitive of it, it is a real encumbrance and an issue. There is just no language in the code that allows us to address the decreasing or the elevating of property values. There are a few other things in here, but of course, all of you will have the opportunity to voice your own concerns during the testimony portion of the hearing. So the first thing, traffic. The concern regarding increased traffic on Northwest Abraham was raised, I think, in most of your responses, your written responses. So staff would like to make it just kind of clear for the record that we are stewards of the code and we essentially just address the criteria. And so for a concern like this, what we have to glean on is two areas, right? Our biggest area is what's called a transportation system plan. This is our plan that addresses all of the issues from a transportation standpoint in the city, right? So what our plan has is, and luckily right now, the city of Winston happens to be going through an update of this plan, and we were able to glean information off that. There are staff exhibits 10 and 11 for the body of the Planning Commission. Staff exhibit 10 is existing conditions. All right, so that's a long document that has a lot of numbers in it, a lot of queuing numbers, a lot of traffic intricacies, right? So essentially why that was referenced was because we needed to understand what the capacity to volume ratio was on Abraham. How is it being utilized? Is it at 100% capacity? Is it at 10%? Our findings addressed that right now, with reasonable build out of even the co-op property, the subject property, who is the subject of this application, Abraham Avenue, as erroneous as it sounds, is only being occupied at a 28% capacity, which seems like a erroneous number. That's what the model produced. And sometimes when you're out, you're next to Abraham, you know, you're watching out your windows, it seems like, look, there's a lot of traffic building up, right? There's a bunch of cars, there's queuing, there's people waiting, And a new development is going to exacerbate that issue. We will reiterate from the record, the only thing that staff can do is glean on our empirical data, which so our transportation system plan, what it dictates, factoring everything in the standard industry fashion, is that it's operating at a 26% capacity. Then what we did was we looked at future conditions, right? So how is the road going to be operating in terms of capacity in 20 years? So in 20 years, it shows that it will only be utilized at a 79% capacity. So we're still not at 100. In 20 years, what that anticipates is not just the area being reasonably built out, but the entire western side of Winston. Everything incorporated, but also in the UGB, in the urban growth boundary. If you don't understand analogy or acronyms, please stop me and I'll clarify. So to the west, we have a large amount in our incorporated area, but we also have a fair amount in Woodland Drive and those areas that are in our urban growth boundary, where we will systematically annex. This number in 20 years projects out and facilitates to that as well. So those are two points that we wanted to make sure were in the staff report. The other point we wanted to make is sometimes when we're looking at developments like this, we kind of get caught up in the situation of feeling when they build that, it's going to cause a huge increase of traffic, right? So there's something that takes place when we put our plan into place. And I'm talking back in the early 80s when all the zoning was tacked on to all these properties, right? So what our TSP does is it says, what would our traffic be all around here when everything's reasonably built out, right? And that's how that's factored in. And that's how the road is constructed. That's why it's a 60-foot right-of-way width. That's why it's of the capacity it is. So it was built out to facilitate to that type of growth and that type of build-out with full anticipation. So we wanted to clarify that part for the record. Point number two is most of you in here, this is your second hearing, right? This is your second time coming down and potentially voicing your concerns. In 2017, we had a land use application. It was submitted. It was given a tentative approval. It was appealed to the city council, right? During that application process, a transportation impact analysis was submitted. Now, if one wasn't submitted in 17, we would have asked for one today, because with large developments like this, the city has full volition to say, because of how intensified what you're asking is, we need you to submit a specified impact analysis around that development, which is exactly what we got in 2017. There haven't been, that analysis factored in potential full build out of the co-op, of the subject property, and the area to the west. So, and by reasonable build out, what I mean is a reasonable middle of the ground threshold, right, for land use and development. So essentially, that traffic impact analysis, which has been entered into the record as staff exhibit number 9, what that referenced is, hey, there's been a safety concern that's been raised, right? So let's do some empirical data, let's do some analysis in the standard industry way, from a transportation engineering standpoint. And what they were able to produce is empirical data that shows there is no safety warrant that's being met. What that means is that after the build out of the subject application and development, the road, in terms of Northwest Abraham, will continue to operate at capacity and function in its normal fashion. So that's what the evidence that's been entered into the record, and again, staff is neutral. This is reference, it's put into the record. It doesn't, you know, to us, we just facilitate the rules. So those two things have been entered into the record, and they're there as public record. Anyone can gain copies if they like. So transportation was by far and away the largest concern. And that's why we wanted to spend the most amount of time addressing some of the things, and also to voice for the record what the criteria says we have to do, right? The criteria says we have to reference our plan, our transportation plan. Our criteria also says if it's big enough, we can ask for a transportation analysis, which we received in 17, and we were able to glean more knowledge from. So those two things help to further clarify how the criteria is being covered and met. The second thing that was referenced was noise, right? This is going to produce a lot more noise. We have some findings in here that essentially address that. And from a city standpoint, a development of this nature will be under the same noise ordinance as anywhere else in the city and would be subject to that sort of noise ordinance. In addition, the application dictates that quiet hours during the nighttime will be perpetuated in the same fashion as any other residential area, right? So RV parks tend to be transient in some nature, but also there is a major residential component, right? So people are staying in their RV, maybe from educational purposes, maybe for longer length purposes, but the noise ordinance will be enforced in the same regard as anywhere else in the city, right? So that was point number two. Point number three is drainage, right? So we have a lot of language in our code that deals with the drainage situation. And I won't go into in-depth detail, but we actually have a concurrent permit process. When looking at drainage and runoff, especially when you have a creek just adjacent to the property, you have a situation to where you're subject to the city's permits, our permits, but also the Department of Environmental Quality. And we have a very robust response from Sarah Suter, who we keep in contact with in a normal regard. Our permit is going to be a drainage analysis, right? You need to have an engineer work over what the landscape looks like, those types of things. You need to factor it by numbers, and you need to offer solutions on how you're going to mitigate runoff into the creek or adverse impacts to neighboring properties. That's typically how the drainage process works, and then we say you need to install those. But in addition to that, drainage has to be addressed by what's called a 1200C permit from DEQ. So they go the extra mile when we're dealing with a development that's an acre or more, and this absolutely meets that threshold, right? Exceeds it. So DEQ has their concurrent permitting process that they need to address and tie up all the requirements for that. And I'm happy to provide anybody at their request the response that we received from the Department of Environmental Quality. As a condition of approval, drainage will be addressed from a city standpoint, but we will also require documentation and proof of concurrence and approval from DEQ or the Department of Environmental Quality. So that's point number three, drainage, a big one. The next one, a lot of you mentioned floodplain, right? So in the event of a flood, it might, you know, the floodwaters are going to come, it's going to fill up. Maybe some of you have been in the area long enough that you've seen some of the pooling or ponding that happens over there in the subject property just adjacent to State Highway 42. A big deal. It's a big deal to the city because the regulatory floodway is the area that the river would become in the event of a flood. And there would be very high flow and frequency in terms of water. The reason it's important to govern this area with great care is because if you do development in it and you're not able to prove through analysis that it won't cause a detriment, what happens is you push water downstream onto other people's property if it floods. Right, so the river rises, it changes the quality and the behavior of the flood, it all changes, right? So now we have new things in that area, and what it's going to do is downstream, it's going to push water on other people's property. That's what happened, that's the dynamic and the detriment that can take place. And this particular area, I took great care in trying to address all the criteria, and we were able to do that. I think there's one of two certified floodplain managers left in the county, and I'm one of them, so this was an important topic to me, because taking care of the floodplain is something that we have to do in good conscience and with good policy, right? So one of the things that we want to clarify is that a portion of the property is located in the floodplain. What the code says you have to do is there was an analysis produced to dictate where the floodplain is in floodway, so you need to use that same analysis to prove you won't cause a rise or push water on other people's property. So as a condition of approval, and the applicant doesn't have a whole lot of development in this area. There's a little bit of a travel way. There's about 6 pull-in spaces or back-in spaces, and there's a walking trail. So there's minimal development comparatively to what I've seen in the past. But what they're going to have to do is go to an engineer, produce an analysis that stamp that proves by the data that you won't cause a rise in the event of that. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is dealing with the situation of standing water that spreads out in the floodplain, right? So the code is more concerned with protecting individual structures in this regard. So elevation, flood vents, what we call flood proofing, right? So those are conditions of approval. Some of them will take place once they pull permits for permanent structure development. So that was point number 5. Point number 6, wetlands. I know that some of you were plugged in with the wetland situation. And in 2017, with the previous application, there was a wetland delineation done. And it dictated where those wetlands were located on the property. And they're nominal, they're not very big. But they're scattered, there's a faction of them on the property, and they have to be protected. That wetland delineation can no longer be used. It expired June of this year, right? So as a condition of approval, we have to require the applicant to do a new delineation to figure out the boundaries of the wetland. And then we have to do a full prohibition for any development in the wetland, as according to the Department of State Lands. And we received that response from DSL, or the Department of State Lands, by virtue of a remonstrance. And again, I'm happy to provide anybody with a copy of the response we got from Chris Stevenson from DSL. She is the one that responded with the information that the wetland delineation is expired. Now, what I mean when I say wetland delineation is, you might feel like on properties wherever there's a potential wetland. Right? There's 3 key indicators to wetlands. There's either hydraulic soil, standing water, or wetland vegetation, right? So the Department of State Lands, they have a map that shows potential wetlands. And whenever there's a development like this, the local jurisdiction, us, we have notified DSL, and then they will come back if it's a potential wetland and say, you need to hire a wetland delineator and get it delineated to solidify if it is a wetland. Right, so that was done in 2017. It was dictated there was. Those are expired now. We need to have new ones. And then there will be a full prohibition to protect those wetlands. So point number 7 would be sewer capacity. Sewer or water capacity, those two things are synonymous, if you will. The sewer capacity is a tough thing. Because the city doesn't even have all the empirical data we need in terms of recognizing the situation. I know some of you have seen the new snow pump station that went in some years ago. So we are making progress in terms of facilitating the sewer situation. But as a condition of approval to address this area, we're going to need to see flow numbers coming from the park. We need to see that, and that will help further address and outline how the sewer situation is supposed to be facilitated. In addition to that, many of you probably don't know, but we have a sewer line that actually exists on the property. It travels. I can show you the conceptual plan just to add validity to this. So if you look here, you're not going to see it on this conceptual plan, but if you follow my mouse, actually, can I borrow your laser pointer there? I'm going to point this over here so I don't mistakenly shine it in someone's eye. So we have a sewer line that runs like this and goes down here and goes all the way down. So there's a trunk line involved as well. And it's pre-existing. It's there. It's an older one. And That necessitates requiring the applicant to place this sewer line in an easement. It'll be a 20-foot easement, so the city will have perpetual access to maintain the sewer line. So we have tried to, by way of conditions of approval, we have tried to address the sewer situation as fully and as comprehensively as we can. In conclusion, based upon the outline findings above, staff is not making a recommendation. However, we can assert that the project with the following conditions can be made compatible. Would like to state for the record, the conditional use permit criteria is anchored on compatibility. Is it compatible or can it be made compatible with the existing or adjacent zoning designations or uses in the area? So the following conditions are recommended. If you'll just bear with me, we're almost to the completion of the staff report here. Number one, the proposed conditional use shall substantially conform to the request as presented in the application, except as specifically modified by the Planning Commission. Quiet hours of the RV park shall be between 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. Access into the RV park will be through proposed entrance and exit of Northwest Abraham Avenue. The applicant shall obtain a right-of-way access permit from the City of Winston Public Works Department. Signage for the RV park shall be in accordance with the sign standards of Section 154.073 of the Winston Municipal Code. The applicant shall coordinate with the Oregon Health Authority prior to the construction of a pool facility and obtain any necessary approval or permits. A copy of this permit will fulfill this condition. The applicant shall coordinate with Winston-Diller Water District for the extension of the water services and shall submit a letter of compliance to fulfill this condition. The applicant shall coordinate with Winston-Diller Public Works for the extension of the sanitary sewer services and shall submit a letter of compliance to show fulfillment of this condition. The applicant shall obtain a grading permit from the Superintendent of Public Works per Winston Municipal Code 154.058 for any fill or grading activities on the property and submit a copy to the file for fulfillment. The applicant shall submit a no-rise certification letter from a State of Oregon licensed registered engineer that illustrates the proposed development will not cause a rise in the event of a base flood. The applicant shall coordinate with DEQ or the Department of Environmental Quality for the necessary permits for development of the site, including but not limited to permits for grading and stormwater and or the 1200 seat permit. The applicant property owners are required to submit a copy of the necessary permit to the City of Winston. The applicant shall install sidewalks along Northwest Abraham Avenue. The applicant shall meet all applicable criteria for off-street parking requirements of the Winston Municipal Code 154.059. The applicant shall meet all applicable parking area location requirements as prescribed in the Winston Municipal Code. The applicant shall meet all parking improvement requirements as prescribed in the Winston Municipal Code. The applicant shall submit a parking and landscaping plan with all necessary requirements covered under Winston Municipal Code 154.066. The applicant shall install a site obscuring fence along the west and northern property lines along the frontage of Northwest Abraham Avenue to minimize visual impacts to the surrounding neighborhoods. The applicant shall maintain a clear vision for the corner of State Highway 42 and Abraham Avenue. The applicant shall submit an RV park plan to the Douglas County Building Department for plans review. The requested structures shall be located in accordance with the requirements of the riparian vegetation corridor overlay. The applicant shall contact the City of Winston for the RV park office to be addressed. The applicant property owner is required to execute a 20-foot easement area to be dedicated to the City of Winston, commencing at the northwest corner of the subject property, traveling southerly along the western property line and encompassing the existing sewer trunk line to ensure the city has perpetual access for maintenance purposes. Such easement shall have full legal description and be recorded with the Douglas County Clerk's Office. The recreational vehicles located inside the approved park are required to be quick disconnect and remain road-ready and remain on-site fewer than 180 days pursuant to the Winston Municipal Code 154.105, the applicant property owner will be required to submit to the city a 180-day removal plan to be inspected by the city prior to final approval. Such plan will allow the city code compliance officer to have full access to the property for inspection directly related to the NFIP 180-day removal compliance rule. The applicant property owner will be advised that if the 180-day requirement is not maintained, then all citations will be assessed directly to the property owner and not the space holders. I will add a caveat to that, because that is also one of the many responses that we received in terms of length of stay. We all know the situation typically happens in recreational vehicle parks. We have two pre-existing RV parks here. We have another one up near Pepsi Road that's newer, and that was constructed and put in place in the early 2000s. And typically we do see long lengths of stay, don't we? I mean, that's what happens there. So one of the things we want to clarify and we want to read into the record is, as a city jurisdiction, again, we are stewards of the code. And we are subject not just to our code, but there are state Oregon revised statutes that we are subject to. There's one I want to read into the record that really helped to spearhead the length of stay situation. And we had to factor this in. So ORS 197.493, some of you may have read or heard of this one, the placement and occupancy of recreational vehicles. A state agency or local government may not prohibit the placement or occupancy of a recreational vehicle or impose any limit on the length of occupancy of a recreational vehicle solely on the grounds that the occupancy is in a recreational vehicle. If the recreational vehicle is located in a manufactured dwelling park, mobile home park, or recreational vehicle park. We had to factor that in as a statute in terms of the length of stay. It is a request that we essentially communicated with the property owner, because essentially that is a situation where they are proposing additional development. There are additional people that will be staying in the city, so we wanted to try to facilitate some additional tax relief. The best way would have been through our transient room tax, but unless there is a 30-day or less length of stay, then we would not be able to achieve accounting for that. However, the FEMA federal rule requires that any recreational vehicles in the floodplain have to be removed within 180 days. So that is a federal rule that overrides a state rule. So we did tack that on as a condition of approval. I wanted to read that into the record and explain it, that we were conscious of the length of stay situation, very much so. So the condition number 24, the applicant property owner is required to correlate with the City of Winston Public Works to determine sanitary sewer capacity to ensure the proposed development will not cause a detrimental burden on the existing system. 25, prior to development, the applicant property owner is required to submit a drainage analysis that factors in the fully built out cubic foot per second runoff versus pre-development information. The applicant is required to submit to the city solutions for mitigation efforts to ensure no adverse impacts on Looking Glass Creek or adjacent property owners happen. Such analysis and determination will be required and inspected by the city's contract engineer at the developer's expense. The property owner is required to install all mitigation measures prior to final approval from the city to ensure all runoff is mitigated on site. The applicant property owner shall submit copies of wetland delineation reports prepared by a certified wetland delineator that illustrates full concurrence with the Department of State Lands. The applicant property owner shall be advised that all wetland areas shall have a full prohibition of development, including fill activities. Condition 27, the applicant property owner shall be advised that any future in-stream or development located within the high bank area, also located within the high bank area, will require concurrence with the required federal 401 or 404 permits directly related to compliance with the Clean Water Act. No development activity, including the placement or removal of fill, is authorized in Looking Glass Creek or the high bank area. Number 28, in the concluding condition, after the 12-day appeal period has expired and the above conditions have been met, the applicant shall contact the City of Winston to obtain a planning clearance worksheet for authorization of each improvement proposed in the development. That is including the clubhouse office structure, the 12 cabins, the restroom laundry facility, the two additional restroom shower facilities, and the pickleball or bocce courts. That concludes my staff report. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you all for bearing with me.
That's a lot to take in. Does the applicant wish to present any testimony?
Travis Schneider, 205 I Street, Eureka, California. First and foremost, I want to thank Thomas. He's been remarkable throughout this process. I've been lucky enough to work as an engineer for a number of years, and he's done a remarkable job as part of this process, being very transparent with myself and communicating a lot of the conditions. And so thank you, Thomas, for that. And it's a nice reflection on the City of Winston. In terms of the project, I recognize that there's obviously a lot of people here with concerns, and I'm very cognizant of those. I think that we've done a lot as part of the conditions of approval to address those concerns, and we will continue to address those concerns as we are able to hopefully work through the process of final approval. For those of you who do not know me, I own 5 RV parks with my wife. We're very sensitive to the long-term stay aspect of RV parks. It's an eyesore, and I'm very cognizant of that. So that's a big, big issue for me. I drive through my parks routinely myself and contact my general manager regularly to say, hey, so-and-so has plants outside their unit. The age of this vehicle, it's questionable. We typically employ a 10-year age requirement on all RVs within our parks. And so I know that that's a concern, and I just want to relay that I'm very cognizant of that. At this time, I have no further testimony. I'm here to answer any questions anyone may have as part of the process, but I'll turn it over to the general public.
Are there any parties who wish to speak in favor of the application? Okay. Are there any parties who wish to speak in opposition to the application? And since obviously there are, I think what we'll do is we'll start at the front row on my left and we'll just work our way through. How about that?
I have a quick question.
Oh, hold on 1 second for me yet.
I've heard there are 6 cabins, 12 cabins, 13 cabins, and this says 7 cabins.
There are 13 cabins total.
Okay, because there's conflicting numbers.
Yep, 13 is the appropriate number.
Okay.
Chairman, if I may, the neighbors has hired me as their representative and they'd like to have me touch my person.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The neighbors has hired me to testify first as their representative, if that's at all possible.
It's fine.
So typically, if there has been a professional hired by the neighborhood to speak for them, you would then allow that speaker to represent all of the people in here that they're working for. And so if anybody wants to come up and speak, you'd want to speak about anything other than what she speaks about in her report. So we just don't want to get into just repeating the same thing over and over again. But once she's done, then the next comments will be comments that would be different. So that would conclude my comments.
All right. Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, we request a little bit of latitude towards the time requirements presented to us due to the length of the staff report.
Can I get your name and address, then?
That's fine. My name is Leslie Wilson. I live at 457 Buckhorn Road. Roseburg, Oregon. I'm a retired land use consultant.
Can't hear.
We are feeling
and I don't hear myself either.
Slide your chairs forward.
Anybody who wants to hear a little better, possibly maybe we can set some additional chairs up here as well if you want to move to the front.
It seems like your microphone picks up better than that one.
Yeah, that's not.
We can give you this one, Leslie, here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hold it up under your chin.
I got enough under my chin. As I mentioned, I'm a retired professional land use planner. I've been hired by the neighborhood to research and present for you. Currently, 5 minutes will be a significant time restraint for this presentation. I have provided Thomas a copy of a report that was generated for you in your review. It has 29 findings of fact. It has 8 conditions of approval that we have drafted for your consideration. Some of the expected impacts on the proposed development may have on nearby neighborhoods are outlined. I must say that the neighbors do not oppose development. That is in character with the neighborhood and walk with it. They do, however, dislike receiving notice about a similar development application that was denied 6 years ago. This application brought before you tonight, presented lacks substance and falls short in the arena of merit concerning the city's comprehensive plan, land development code, the zoning ordinance. I make my first observation of failure is the inclusion of the 2017 traffic impact analysis. That is a 6-year-old document that has not been amended. That is a document that did not even consider, and I stress consider, traffic movements at Abraham and Highway 42. It was a neighborhood study. Didn't even consider buses that come down to that intersection. That study could no way consider the construction of the current BC co-op, which the neighborhood generally appreciates, nor a gas station, which has an increased number of traffic movements, especially during the PM peak hour. This traffic study did not consider development impacts towards those at that intersection, school buses, nor did it consider bicycle traffic. There seems to be a part on the applicant to submit no addendum to the TIA. I was told by Thomas during a meeting with him that the TIA 2017 was submitted, but nothing else. At that time, he did not have agency comments to be published. We were not able to review them at that time. So our findings are based solely on the comprehensive plan and the zoning ordinance. At this time, I'd like to continue with our presentation. This applicant did not represent many neighborhood concerns or provide mitigation measures to be structured within the application. This applicant is relying on conditional approval to see what he or she may have to submit. But due to the applicant's insufficiencies, better yet, we are not here to disrespect the applicant to develop an RV park. At this time, I'd like to point out several inefficiencies of the application. The application does not address policies outlined in the comprehensive plan. The submittal to include simple elements normally found in quality application, such as proof of ownership. The applicant has not shown authorization from the trust to move forward with the application, nor shown proof of approval from any lender. This alone should be reason to deny the application on its face without any further testimony or debate. Next, submittal of an updated TIA, as mentioned before, was not included. There's a failure to include a simple map showing the roadway type. Thomas mentioned the roadway classification being a minor collector. I must disagree with that statement. The roadway classification per your TSP and adopted comprehensive plan shows that it is a major collector. There is a discussion for your new transportation system plan to downgrade from a major collector to a minor collector, but that has not been adopted at this time. We have that exhibit in your packet showing that status. As shown in the draft site plan, the applicant proposes to develop cabins or tiny homes. Both are not permitted in the zone or in an RV park under the City of Winston Land Development Code. They are not a type of hotel, motel, or even a rooming house.
I'm going to stop you there for just one moment. We're going to give an extra 5 minutes for the finish.
I'll try to wrap it up that time. Thank you. Neither are permitted in the AO zone. An application of this type should at least include a floodplain map, cross-reference data from the South Umpqua River study. When the development is in both the floodway and floodplain flood fringe, and we have included that exhibit. Thomas mentioned that he is a certified floodplain manager. I was one too, retired. I see nothing in your code that requires a no-rise certificate. Feds would like to see it, but nothing in your code. We agree that it should be a condition of approval. The applicant has not provided an engineering proof of no rise, which I just mentioned. Formal wetlands assessment, agency review, is also missing. This should be within the application, because as we're seeing that the applicant is relying on your conditions to find out who he has to go to get permits from. And the important factor with that statement is, I stress this, other state and federal agencies may require movement or placement of specific items on the site plan. And you're not getting a chance to see that movement or placement of where they're going to be. The application does not acknowledge or provide any inclusion of protection measures for a satellite stream. The application even lacks a stream function assessment. We also have that in our exhibits. The applicant has not provided proof of discussion and copies of submittals for development review with the state and federal agencies concerning a 303D listed stream. And nearby river, with TMDL issues not currently addressed by any local development, proof of the 303 and TMDL status is included in our exhibit. The applicant has not included USDA or NRCS soil study showing the hydrology of the site soils, restrictions towards structural development. We have included that. The applicant has failed to address protection of agricultural soils found on the subject property, which is zoned agricultural. Research shows class 1, 2, and 3 soils are formally protected by state and city. If the commission chooses to move forward with this hearing and desires to consider conditional approval to be attached to an approval, we must acknowledge that many times proof of conditions being met are submitted to the city without proof provided to parties, nor additional review by the commission. We request the commission require an additional hearing for compliance of any condition required outside agency review and permitting before starting of the site development. With that said, the neighborhood presents you 8 conditions of approval for your consideration. This is on top of Thomas's number of conditions. These conditions range from livability requirements to the land development code. The applicant has even requested 3 driveway access points for a major collector. I understand the goal of the city is to limit access to one point. Even the existing speed of traffic is of concern, along with bringing recreational vehicles in with increased probability of collision possible. We suggest in one of our conditions that a speed hump be installed on Abraham. Finally, neighbors are concerned with the possibility of long-term residence, homesteading, the development where it becomes and creating a transit camp with filth, drug paraphernalia, noise, and other unthinkable problems to our neighborhood children. In closing, I would like to note the applicant submitted a 7-page application with little or minimal, or simply no substance. It appears the applicant thought the city of Winston was a small town without the livability standards. Please note that the neighborhood submits a 63-page document with detailed reasons for the commission to deny this application. Quickly, with the applicant's letter included in his submittals, dated September 6, 2022, the applicant won a PUD, a planned unit development, not a conditional use permit. That letter was not withdrawn. That is also another reason to deny this application, due to it being the wrong application provided to the applicant. A PUD would be a better approach for the neighborhood. With all respect, thank you. Do you have any questions for me? And would you like me to present each of the neighborhood conditions of approval to you now?
Thank you very much for all of this. It's a lot to look at. And I appreciate it a great deal. You obviously put a lot of work and effort into this. And I appreciate you bringing a lot of these concerns.
Madam Chair, I have one question, if you will allow me to answer.
Yeah.
So when you mentioned you would like a additional compliance hearing, is that a formal request for a continuance? Or what exactly are you asking?
It could be a formal request for continuance. It'd be our belief that the applicant could not gather the appropriate materials for state and federal agency review and comment during the hearing notice period of the 120-day approval. It would be our suggestion, if the commission does not deny the application on its face, that the applicant withdraw the application, gain the proper permits and approvals conditionally.
Okay.
And then submit that as an entire packet to be considered.
Okay, we just have to clarify for the record if you did or did not request a continuance.
Absolutely, we're not requesting a continuance this time.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead and move on with those who do want to still speak. Thank you for speaking for several, I appreciate that so much.
I can't speak that well, so I'm good.
Okay. Did you want to speak, sir?
Yes. It might have been covered already, but I hope it hasn't been. 180 days is 150 days too long. You effectively make it a mobile home park with you guys having a different zoning zone completely. It's a
sir, my apologies. Can you state your name and address?
Kevin Frito, 136 Wood Duck Street. I'm where the headlights are going to shine into my bedroom from the exit of that place. Anyway, effectively becomes a mobile home park. It's out of its zoning league. Past there. The other item I just had to say was you guys are going to lose your track taxes because if they stay over 30 days, you're not getting any income. No lodging tax. It's just done. And everything else was pretty well covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, go ahead, state your name and address and then speak your mind.
Nancy Bridges, 110 Northwest Brock Drive, Winston, Oregon, 97496. I have two concerns. I have a picture that I had taken in 2016 of that 40 some acres flooded all the way to the back of my home. I live directly across the drainage ditch from this proposed park. My next question is probably a little late, but when you try to make a left-hand turn from Abraham onto Highway 42, you have to pull way forward past the stop sign because of the handicap ramps which are needed. But at my same concern, when I'm trying to make a left-hand turn, I'm way out there in traffic. I just have nightmares of an RV with a trailer making a wide turn, and where do I go? Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy, would you like to enter your picture into the record?
This is the only copy I have.
I'd be happy to resubmit one.
I actually have them on my phone, too.
Do you have them?
Okay.
I do now.
Thank you.
Hi, Terry Fink, 1100 Abraham Avenue. Leslie covered quite a few things that I had, but with respect to what Nancy just said about the stop bar that the city has willingly moved back, I'm not sure why, but that has been created a blind and dangerous turn to left, going left from Abraham onto 42. I'm not sure if that's because of the co-op or the our proposed the request for the RV park, but it's definitely very dangerous.
Just to answer her question.
Yeah.
That work was all done by the state transportation system. That's not done by the city. We were quite amazed at the depth that they had placed that stop bar, but because they had moved those handicap ramps back, that was the appropriate location for it based on the geometry of the intersection. But you're right, it's something that we as well have concerns about with DOT, but so we'll talk to them on that, or we're going to continue because they're going to repave that whole section here in the next couple of years.
I went to the meeting last night and did speak with one of the ODOT representatives regarding the movement of the stop bar, and they were not aware of the current TIA that had been submitted with the previous conditional use permit application. And he asked me to go ahead and email him a copy and he would submit it to the reviewers. So I am happy to go ahead and do that. He did provide his email address.
Yeah.
And if that will help get something taken care of, because it is a very highly dangerous situation.
Yeah.
You add a gas truck coming for the co-op, which I think is great, but could be a different station. I will go ahead and do that if
I just wanted to make you aware that that's the state highway is responsible for those.
Okay.
Not the city.
Okay. And then my other concern is the quiet hours. You indicated that they would be enforced between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. Do we call the local police department, or is there going to be somebody on site to enforce noise?
Leslie? That's a good question.
Yeah, Madam Chair. So the noise ordinance would be enforced by the Winston PD, but there's two parts to your question. Mm-hmm. The applicant may be able to answer the second part to it in regards to having an on-site superintendent of some fashion or whatnot. So I'm going to ask him to keep that in his memory bank during rebuttal. Okay. He can potentially address it.
Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you. All right, anyone else?
Well, my name is Sandra Cole and I live on Pindale Avenue, 372. I noticed that almost the whole street is here. We get a lot of traffic just as a cut through between 42 and Looking Glass Road. So I can only imagine what this impact is going to do along with the co-op, which we desperately need, and the additional traffic that the filling station is going to have, and this on top of it.
Thank you. Next. State your name.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Vera Potter. I should have forgotten my name. 335 Pinnacle Avenue. One of the concerns is since people drive their RVs all over the place, the undercarriage gets contaminants and trash and all sorts of undesirable elements that usually when the park actually floods, all those contaminants are going to be washed into the creek, which will be taken down to the river. How do you propose to stop that from happening? A fence is not going to help.
We may not be able to answer your questions tonight. They will all be answered as part of the process.
Okay.
So whatever's not answered for you tonight will be answered at a later date. But talking about contaminants, think about contaminants all year long underneath cars traveling on Highway 42 that are not staying in RC, they're passing through. And every time it rains, those contaminants get washed off the road and they drain to the streams now. Currently, the river is under a TMDL, which is a total maximum daily load analysis, as are most of the rivers, if not all of them, in Oregon. And the major element there is temperature. We are required now we have an ordinance in place to deal with spills that happen and drain to the river, but for naturally designed events like the state highway water running off and running into the streams, there's no current regulation for dealing with that. So the contaminations that will be underneath cars and things will be contained on a hard impervious surface, but it will get washed into the drains, you're correct about that, as would any other new street or neighborhood in the community. So, but there is no regulations currently for dealing with runoff, stormwater runoff in the river, as far as us being required to monitor it, measure it, get a permit for it, that type of thing.
And also, I concur with the speaker that was ahead of me about the traffic increase from 99 onto Looking Glass and then coming down Pintail and Teal, because those are the two access points. And we have children running all up, they just run amok all over the neighborhood, and they don't they don't pay attention to the speed of the traffic. It's already way over 25 miles an hour. And I think we're just asking for some child to get killed. That's it.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else?
My name is Margaret Peach. My address is 130 Northwest Teal Street. I'm here tonight to share some, not all, of my concerns regarding the proposed RV park. The application appears to be lacking public safety. The traffic in our neighborhood and Highway 42 has increased so rapidly over the last couple of years. Pulling out onto Highway 42 sometimes takes quite a long time, and then there are those that are just too impatient and take off anyway, hoping someone will slow down for them. On Abraham, we not only have passenger cars, pickups, SUVs, etc., but school buses, semi-trucks, dump trucks, log trucks, you name it, none of which obey the 25 mile per hour speed limit. It's very dangerous out there, not only on Abraham, but the side streets as well. There's a blind curve pulling out of Teal Street. We have to look both ways the best we can, pull out slowly, and then take off, hoping there's not a car or whatever speeding around that curve. On the occasion there is, they are honking their horn at us because they are having to slam on their brakes. There's school bus stops each direction, both morning and afternoon, all along Abraham, one being at the end of Teal Street. The children have to walk across Abraham to board the bus. We need to protect them. There's little or no speed limit enforcement through our neighborhood. I've called the police requesting their presence and explained what we see while sitting on our patio, not only the speeding down Abraham, but coming around the corner of Teal Street so fast, if there was someone crossing the street, they would not be able to stop. We have also witnessed people passing each other on Abraham and racing. The police did put up a speed rigid board on Abraham in the summer of 2021 after I called them. People seemed to pay attention at first, but then got used to it and sped right on through it. So that obviously does not work. With the above traffic and speeding problems in mind, the increased traffic and congestion that this RV park would create will become even more dangerous. If approved, at the very least, there needs to be a traffic light at the intersection of Abraham and 42. There needs to be a four-way stop at Abraham and Teal Streets. There needs to be a turn lane into the RV park and speed humps on Abraham to get people to slow down. I've camped all my life in federal, state, county, and private campgrounds, but not in a neighborhood. When we've camped in private campgrounds, some of them have been shiny and new with rules and usually a 14-day maximum stay. Everything was so nice. A few years later, our travels take us back to that area, and we remember there was a nice campground there. We enter to find the rules posted, but obviously they are not being followed or enforced. It's very apparent there are RVs that are there permanently with broken down vehicles parked by them, tarps on the roofs to keep the rain out, tents erected for storage for some of their worldly possessions.
Thank you.
Am I done?
Yeah,
thank you.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah, we actually were limited to 5 minutes and the machine didn't work for some reason. But we gave you a little longer.
Thank you.
Margaret, if you would like to enter your letter into the record, it can be placed into the record as evidence. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, next.
Supervisor Schreckengasten. You did very well with the pronunciation.
Thank you.
I also live at 335 Pintail. To address one more addition about the traffic on Pintail, there are crossways, pathways for pedestrians, for the kids to go to school, that they cross Pintail in the middle of the block. There is no indication whatsoever that there is a pedestrian crossing at those points. And all of us residents also use those when we're walking our dogs. I think there needs to be, what do they call them? Not bumps, but humps put in.
Like speed bumps, is that what you're saying?
Yes, on Pintail. And or at least paint something on the street and post some signs. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next.
Barbara Hoffman from 358 Northwest Teal. My main concern is the length of stay that this RV park is going to allow. I've done a lot of traveling. My family has been to a lot of RV parks, and like the other gal said, they start out great with laws that you can only stay so long, and the next thing you know, they've become havens for homeless, for drug addicts, and for people who just don't have any place else to stay, so they pull their RV in, and there they sit forever. There has to be a strict rule, and in campgrounds around, you can only stay for a very short period of time. We don't have that much around here that would warrant an RV to be able to, oh, I'm gonna park here and go see this site, that site, other than the wildlife safari. So why are they gonna park here to begin with? They're gonna park here so they have a place to stay that's cheap and can be end up running the place down, which will run our neighborhood down.
Madam Chair, if I may. Yeah, unfortunately, we have no control over the length of stay. That's a state rule. And the only one we have is under the federal FEMA regulations that gives us the ability to have them moved every 180 days. But the state statute clearly states cities have no control over length of stay in RV.
What about the private parks, like the state parks where you can only stay for a week or two? Where do they fall under?
I'm not sure, but I can tell you that the statute clearly does not give us any control.
Well, if it's a privately owned, can't that be?
It can be a condition of the ownership of the park, but we can't regulate that. So we can't say you can only have them there for less than 30 days, which is what we'd like to say, because then we can pick up tax for the night. But we can't. It's totally up to the manager of the park as far as length of stay and age of vehicles and all.
But the manager of the park could regulate the length of stay?
Yes.
So can that be put into their proposition that they can only stay so long?
Well, we can't force that. We can't regulate that. He would. The ownership would have to
buy the property.
Yeah, the ownership would just have to agree to do that as part of the discussion.
So, Madam Chair, if I may, we did broach that subject. We went through a lot of efforts to, and Mr. Schneider can just kind of reaffirm the situation that we approach the property owner to have that type of discussion with full transparency on what that ORS 197 statute says, and is that local jurisdictions can't regulate the length of stay. Now, can they agree to tack on a length of stay? Yes, but unfortunately, the property owner is not willing to regulate unless it's 6 months or more, which we can enforce that particular length of stay because of the floodplain situation and the 180 days. So, but we can't force it because that state statute ties our hands. Can you go ahead? Yep. Name and address, please.
Angel Potter, 124 Wood Deck. I just had a question about if the 180 days also applies to the cabins. What's the regulation on that?
The cabins are just, they're fixed structures in the park, you know, so they would not be regulated.
Somebody could move in and live.
When we look at it, because it's in that 180 days structure under FEMA, what it says is all of those vehicles, because they're in a floodway, the ones that are, have to be moved out of there. They have to be road ready and ready to be moved out in the event of notice of a flood. So we would get notice from the county that we had a flood coming down the South Alfog, you know, due to the rain. We would get all that information. We would have time to notify the park ownerships because we've got three other ones in town right now.
But they don't have tiny homes or cabins?
They don't. That's a new attribute that this application is bringing forward so they're considered under that, but they have to be built above the floodplain. So it's like when you look over at what Douglas, the Farmers Co-op, has done, what they did was fill the ground so that now they are above the flood level so that their facility is authorized now to stay in there because it's above the floodway. So any fixed structure that would be in the mobile home park or in the RV park would have to be above the flood line, constructed above the flood path line.
So I guess my concern is not so much about it flooding, but just how long a person would be able to stay.
They can stay up to the 180 days where they're required to move.
Okay, so it does encompass the tiny homes.
Not
tiny homes. They're permanent structures in the facility, so they have to meet all the building codes. They're not tiny homes. They're cabins because tiny homes is a completely different designated type of structure. So, but the cabins are just a part of the park, and they'll be permanent. People will come and go out of those structures.
The 180 day rule applies to recreational vehicles. There are a different set of provisions and criteria that apply to permanent structural development. So when the length of stay question came up, the question is can we regulate the length of stay in any regard for RVs? And the answer is, based on the state statute, we cannot. But then further, the answer, according to a federal rule, because they're in the floodplain, we can, but only 180 days. That does not apply to permanent structural development. So as it relates to the cabins, they're going to be required, when they get their permit, to get an elevation certificate, right? The finished floor height has to be elevated 1 foot above the base flood elevation. Anything enclosed below the BFE has to have flood venting, entry and exit for in terms of flood vents. All of those requirements have to be met in terms of, and all the permanent structural development is being proposed just in the floodplain, not in the floodway, right? So just to clarify, there's a disparity there in terms of criteria and a distinction. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Thomas. Anyone else?
I'll be real quick. My name is Gabe Park, lovely mouthy wife. 124 Wood Duck. The only thing I have is with 102 proposed spots, let's just say one person per spot, that's 102 individuals. Do we have the means within the city for first responders to be able to cover these issues, or are we going to have some sort of increase within our already high taxes to increase law enforcement personnel? We have really good fire department, medical personnel, but are we going to need to increase staff? Is that something that's been proposed?
No.
Okay. That's all I was wondering. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, point of clarification for what's been testified.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, for City Ordinance 154.105, provisions of the Flood Hazard Protection. Floodplain, subsection B, 3C, recreational vehicles. All recreational vehicles within the floodplain shall be either one, on site for fewer than 180 consecutive days, or be fully licensed and ready for highway use on wheels or jacking system and be attached to the site only by quick disconnect type of utilities and security devices and has no permanent attached additions.
I think you brought
so
that up.
So you have a period in your own code that says that they can stay longer than 180 days.
And that, what you're reading there is the only only regulation we have concerning length of stay. That's all we're saying. So it could be that they're not moved, but they're just ready and licensed and ready to go because they're in a floodway.
Right, in the floodplain, the fringe.
Well,
not
regardless.
But that aside, what I'm trying to say is, we're having a discussion of the 180 days. Your code says or.
Correct.
So if they're licensed, road ready, etc., they can stay for 10 years.
That's correct.
Or longer.
That's correct.
The condition does not reflect the latter or the or. The condition reflects the 180 days. That is the condition of approval.
I understand that, but your condition of approval violates your own code.
We disagree, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, sir, go ahead.
Well, all kind. I'm Leonard Bridges, 110 Northwest Brock Drive, Winston. Kind of comes down to traffic. I was in the business for 26 years, and I hope he understands that these trailers and motorhomes and vehicles are going to be coming in. Not one at a time. They're going to be coming in from the coast around 4 or 5 o'clock, and you got school buses, you got the gas station where they're going to get gas. It's going to be a big plug right at 42 and Abraham. And the other thing you mentioned, bicycle lane. If the bicycle lanes go in, you got a 50-foot roadway, that's going to cut it down to a 40-foot roadway. That's going to cut all the parking off of Abraham, that people park in front of their houses and stuff. So that makes a big difference. I was for it on the first one. Actually, I was in the paper. Me and my wife disagreed on it. And I am not for this. Like I said, I've been in the business for 26 years. With the co-op there and the gas station there, and what they've done with the handicap ramps and the wall out there, you're asking, and the high school, when it gets out, you've got kids walking across that street, you're doing nothing but asking for an accident to happen and somebody to get killed.
Thank you, sir.
Muriel Nichols, 700 Old Brockway Road, Winston. I guess what I need is some clarification. That this is an RV park, which is allowed in an ag zone, correct? So how is permanent housing allowed?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what your question is.
Well, about the cabins.
Yes, we're talking about the cabins. Those are permanent structures. So
Permanent structural development is allowed in the AO zone as well. In some cases, it's allowed if an existing or permitted use is facilitated, those types of things. So the cabins, as well as the athletic courts and the restrooms, all of those things are recognized in the application as amenities or accessory to the park. But since dwellings are allowed in the zone and the cabins fall under residential dwelling units, now I think that what the Winston Municipal Code requirement says is that a dwelling unit per 10 acres is what it is. I would need to, I could check that to be sure, but I think it's one dwelling unit per 10 acres if you're maintaining an existing permitted use, something of that nature. And so just want to clarify from that regard that dwellings are allowed in the underlying zoning designation, but in its entirety, we have a conditional use permit, we have a use that's been proposed. The cabins and the rest of the different, they're recognized as amenities to the park, an accessory to the park.
Even though people can live there permanently?
If they do live there permanently, are they going to have to pay taxes?
Can we?
Okay, if they do live there permanently, are they going to have to pay taxes?
The property owner is going to have to pay taxes. He collects that in his rent or lease of the spaces in order to cover his taxes on the property that he's been collect or paying on for since he purchased the property. So yes, there'll be taxes paid. It's just like anywhere else.
I was asking this question.
One more question. I live in the mobile home park right behind it. Our co-op paid taxes on our property, but I have to pay taxes on my house. Are they going to be able to do the same thing? Gentleman's going to pay taxes on his property, but who's going to pay taxes on that house when somebody lives there for 180 days?
Well, again, RV parks are transient in nature, supposedly.
The cabins,
regardless, are an allowed amenity in the RV park. So, and there is just no requirement for them to pay taxes on the RV itself.
So, what you're saying is I don't have to pay taxes on my house.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm telling you that there are different.
Are you finished?
I wanted to just say one other thing.
One more thing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. And our developer said that he was very cognizant of, you know, the community and how it looks. And I've spent a lot of volunteer time in the community. I want things to look good. And to reiterate what others have brought up, if he's not on site, I mean, what's to say it doesn't go downhill like all the others?
Understood.
And I'd like to have some rules in place that help you.
All right, anybody else?
Madam Chairman, another code clarification.
Hold on one moment. Was there anybody else? All right, go ahead. You were going to read a code.
With all respect to the city manager and the city planner, I would like to go and read very briefly. In the AO zone, use is permitted outright. Now this is page 111 of your land development code, section 154.030. If you go down the list, number 9, single family dwellings, customary provided in conjunction with a permitted use in this classification, provided residence for the landowner, immediate family members, or an employee providing that with an minimum average density of more than 10 acres per dwelling shall be maintained. This is not saying the cabins are permitted. Your code When you go over to looking at recreational vehicles on page 101, gives a definition of a recreational vehicle. And at no place does it talk about cattle. The recreational vehicle part of the same page has no reference to cabin. It has no reference to amenities. It talks about use of facilities, but it does not talk about cabins. When you come down to talking about cabins, let alone tiny homes, you can't even address until 2026. The Building Codes Division has not released those codes. So your code doesn't, as I mentioned earlier, you have hotel, motel, not permitted in the zone. Rooming board, rooming house, you can't do it in the zone. You're very restricted on what you can do in the zone. Your own city definitions, as they state, and as what's being presented to you, and what was presented to you by the applicant, violates, sets you up for a direct appeal.
Thank you. I have a question for the speaker.
Yes.
Are RV parks permitted as a conditional use within the zone?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, anyone else? Okay, we're gonna move on. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'd like to, I'm Greg Merchant, 1021 Highway 42. And I have something I'd like to put on record. It's an aerial photograph taken in 1990 of the property, Trinity Hills. I helped actually do the planning and surveying of Trinity Hills. And as you can see from the airplane and pretty much from outer space, why Abram is serpentine. So this will explain something. Anyone else to see it?
So we're going to enter that into the record?
I'd like to, please.
Okay.
So with that aerial, you can see where Abram was defined. And technically, this is the third approach in putting RVs there. So we were not allowed to do it in the first place. That's why Abram is where it is. And all those streets are there. It was untouchable space past Abram, downstream or towards the creek. The other portion is when we donated the land for Harold and Sid Park, we were going to do an RV park there, considered. But it's better to have open space and a boat and a public restroom. So I wasn't even allowed to put a bench on that because it is what it is and it's in the floodplain. To put 100 whatever fixtures, and if you think that it's going to have people going to play by the rules, they're going to hook up their boat at 3 a.m. to go fishing. And what about this storage? Is someone going to open up the storage and let them have access to their boat? Is someone going to, who's going to monitor this stuff? It doesn't make sense. In other scenarios, it's like if someone builds a house near an airport, you know the airport's there, but no one's going to allow an airport to be put in the neighborhood. So it's an attractive nuisance, and if it were to be done, it would have been done 32 years ago and not the other way around. So this is the last piece that if they're even considering like water damage, the property that we have on the other side of Looking Glass Creek, I'm already losing property. One of the corners is washing out, and that doesn't even include any improvements on this subject property. Another scenario is I pretty much considered the proposal. I think the best use of that property should be parking for the co-op, because there's no turnaround there, or not much. And they could take 5 acres, put it on the high spot, and the rest of the property towards the creek should be used as open space, ag, soccer field, walking parks, plant some trees, call it good. And as far as cut to the chase, basically everyone here, other than maybe the developer, I mean, they have everyone have a good night's sleep, let's say you can deny the permit and get it over to them. They forget it. you have to worry about babysitting 180 days. And so, that's all.
Thank you very much.
Is there any other things to be added into the record before we go to rebuttal? Okay, does the applicant wish to offer rebuttal?
Travis Schneider, 205 I Street, Eureka. I tend to look at it not so much as a rebuttal, but a point of clarification on some of the issues. Yes, we do have an on-site host at all of our parks 24 hours a day, just for any emergencies that may arise. Secondly, I know there's been a lot of discussion with regards to the 180-day stay. Contrary to popular belief, we actually prefer people to stay much less than 180 days, and we prefer people to stay on a nightly basis, in large part because we can charge a much higher rate, and furthermore, that they are less invasive on our utilities and facilities. And so in that regard, we're a big proponent of actually paying the TOT tax, because it shows that our stays are much shorter, and that our rates are being exercised at a much higher level. In terms of the cabins, we do not allow stays any greater than 30 days in any of our cabins at any of our facilities, for the same very reason. I know that there's concerns that those will become long-term facilities, but that is not going to be the case. So I don't know if there were any other items that needed points of clarification, Thomas, that you may have saw.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. We have several things that have came into the record, and there's no way to address all of the concerns this evening. We will attempt to answer some of the questions that have came up in regards to the opposing testimony and things of that nature, specifically as it relates to the different studies and analysis. One question for you, Mr. Schneider. There have been a number of things that have came in regards to requiring a Salmonoid study. Can you speak briefly to maybe any of those things and why those weren't submitted with the application?
Well, I think that we, collectively, we work together very well as staff on this particular submittal. And the items that were provided were what we agreed upon, and ultimately, I believe all the other measures will be satisfied as part of the conditions of approval. So I think that, we've collectively prepared an application to the best of our ability based upon the standards that we were held to, and we're not opposed to the conditions of approval, and Thomas, you've been very transparent with regards to what those items will be, and we're in agreement with those items.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming up on 9 o'clock, and we have been presented with a lot of information on both sides of the aisle, and I believe I'm going to see if we can entertain a motion for continuance.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to for a continuance and for next week or whenever we can get it on the schedule.
Madam Chair, that continuance will be the statute requires a date and time certain of at least 7 days while keeping the record open. We would recommend 14 days, which would put us at November 30th, I believe. Let me check that date real quick. Yes, November 30th.
Can I get a second for that motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you everyone for coming. We appreciate all the feedback that we have gotten. We really do. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, other business?
Other business. I lost my paper, sorry. All right, is there any other business tonight? Thomas, any other business? No?
Nope, Madam Chair.
All right. Hello.
Yes, we did.
This is a vacant, long rectangular lot. That's kind of tucked in there, Gregory. So if you're traveling down Mobile Street, I don't know where the mobile park is. I think it's south.
Hey, over the church is.
Meeting adjourned 8:57.